The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with Sean Kelly, who is entirely responsible for its content.
Welcome to Cyber Chat with Sean Kelly, former CISO at EPA and former deputy CIO at Veterans Affairs on Federal News Radio, part of the Federal News Network. Cyber Chat, where government leaders come to discuss the hottest cyber topics affecting us today. Now your host, Sean Kelly.
Today I'm speaking with John Gilligan, Center for Internet Security Chief Executive, Chris Woloshin, Vice President of System Security for Election Systems and Software, and Matthew Masterson, Senior Cybersecurity Advisor at DHS working on election security. Gentlemen, how are you doing today?
Good, how are you?
Great, thank you.
So Chris, we're going to have a two-part series that we're going to start today talking about election security. And so this will be the first of the two shows. And I could not start a show about election security unless I talked about your article that you put out about DEF CON and what they were saying about elections and machines. Can you give us a little synopsis of the article and your thoughts on that?
Yes, Sean, thank you. DEF CON, for many years, has provided valuable access for security researchers to dig into and understand vulnerabilities of a wide range of technologies. In the last couple of years, DEF CON has stood up what they call a voting village and procured legacy voting equipment from a number of different manufacturers and brought in security researchers and given them unfettered access. What I mean by that is with no time limits, no security controls, no environment that you might see typically in a election office or in a polling place. And these security researchers, in other cases, provide very valuable information to manufacturers and to the public about vulnerabilities that reside in technology. Sean, all technology has some kind of vulnerability. It's a matter of how you apply a risk assessment to those vulnerabilities and then compensating controls to contain them or render them less risky so that technology can be trustworthy and reliable. What I saw at the voting village was a lot of folks with legacy voting equipment laid open on the table, hours and hours of access to it, and then producing reports that seemed to indicate that there were new undiscovered vulnerabilities with this legacy equipment. In many cases, this equipment had been produced in the early 2000s. And yes, while some of it is still in operation in some of our election jurisdictions today, those election jurisdictions shine when it comes to protecting this legacy equipment and ensuring that elections that are conducted on this legacy equipment can be trusted. That's not the environment that happened at the voting village. And it's why ES&S is working with good faith, vetted white hat researchers to test our equipment and make sure that it's absolutely secure and trustworthy in the coming elections.
Man, I mean, that's a fair point, right? I mean, not talking about the DEF CON or an ESS votes and what they say. I mean, but the environment, if you have a system and it's just out there, we've got to look at the system as a whole, as a complete environment, and with the layers of security that we have to look at any environment. Any comments on that?
Yeah, absolutely. Any security strategy, cybersecurity strategy, includes defense in depth, right? It's not just about any one step or silver bullet to protect the system, but creating layers, right? That's physical security, that's network security, that's application security, whatnot. And so we work hard at DHS on a variety of ways to work with state and local officials to understand risk to systems, to work to build that defense in depth, and really to build a resilient election process, right? One that when incidents occur, we're able to detect those incidents, recover from them, and maintain the integrity of the process. And so our focus has been, whether it's information sharing or providing support and services, including in-depth penetration testing of election systems, to build that resilience, understand that defense in depth, and really improve the overall cyber landscape for election systems.
All right, no, I appreciate it. And John, that kind of tees up the document that you're releasing this week or very soon, the three steps to secure your election infrastructure today. Can you tell us about that document?
Sean, thank you. Yes, so the document is intended to be a short list of things that elections offices can do and focus their efforts on the things that can be done in a relative short term. The first of the recommended steps, so there are three steps that are outlined in the brochure. The first of them is to join the Elections Infrastructure Information Sharing and Analysis Center, that's the EI-ISAC. This is an organization that was recently chartered by the Department of Homeland Security and the state and local elections officials to serve as a forum for sharing threat information, for sharing best practices, and as well to provide some monitoring, electronic monitoring of elections equipment. And so the first of these steps is to make sure that the elections offices have joined the EI-ISAC and are participating. The second step is to assess your security posture. And in that vein, there are a couple of vehicles that have that are available and proven useful. One is a document that the Center for Internet Security produced that is called the Handbook for Elections Infrastructure Security that identifies 88 best practices that elections organizations can implement to help secure their elections infrastructure. And so we also have a tool that's available to election offices to help them step through that assessment process. So that's the second step. The third step, it's important that elections offices expect that something may go wrong, and so that they need to have contingency plans, and those contingency plans should be exercised regularly so that in the event of something unforeseen happens, and it may not be a cyber event, it may be something else, that the elections office understands who has what action, who to be contacted, et cetera. So again, the three steps are join the Elections Infrastructure ISAC, assess your security posture, and then develop contingency plans and exercise those scenarios regularly.
And if people want to get a copy of this document, where can they go to?
They can go to the Center for Internet Security website. That's CIS, let's see, CI Security, CISECURITY.org.
Okay.
Sorry.
No, absolutely. And CIS also has the Security Handbook for Federal Elections. Correct?
That's right. The handbook is also available on the website and can be downloaded, or if you want hard copies, you can request hard copies on the website.
John, before we go to break, from 2016 to today, what is the level of cooperation you've seen across the federal and state sectors?
Yeah, well, it's markedly different in my estimation. And after the 2016 challenges that the elections organizations had, and what I saw in those early meetings was a lot of uncertainty with regard to roles and responsibilities between the local elections organizations, the state elections organizations, the federal government. And if I fast forward to today, a little over a year later, what I see is tremendous cooperation. And there is realization that each organization has a role to play. And there are many organizations like the Center for Internet Security, but there are many others that are working to provide support and to help educate and provide better products, more secure products for the elections community.
My guests today are John Gilligan, Center for Internet Security, Chief Executive, Chris Woloshin, Vice President, System Security, Election Systems and Software, Matthew Masterson, Senior Cybersecurity Advisor at DHS for Election Security. I am Sean Kelly, and this is Cyber Chat on Federal News Radio, part of the Federal News Network.
Follow us on Twitter and LinkedIn. Find us on Podcast One. Like us on Facebook. Our mission is helping you meet your mission. Federal News Network.
Welcome back to Cyber Chat on Federal News Radio, part of the Federal News Network. I'm Sean Kelly. My guests today are John Gilligan, Chief Executive for the Center for Information Internet Security, Chris Woloshin, Vice President, System Security, Election System and Software, Matthew Masterson, Senior Cybersecurity Advisor at DHS for Election Security. Matt, before we went on the break, we talked a little bit about defense in depth, but you know, we really haven't talked yet about what the environment of the election comes. So people go in, they see that voting machine. That's all they really see, but there's a lot more to it. Can you give us a little ideas about that?
Yeah, it's a fantastic question, and it's one of the unique challenges within the election sphere. So you have a broad set of systems that support elections that are dependent systems, some networked, some not. including voter registration systems, voter registration databases, online voter registration, which is an outward-facing web portal for folks to be able to both register to vote and update their registration in many states. Electronic poll books are used in many states. That's an electronic register that you check in at when you go to the polling places in many states, as well as ballot on demand printers and other support technology. And so the reality is, when we look at the elections environment and the threat profile, those outward facing systems, the websites, the voter lookup tools to see where your polling place is, what's on your ballot, are the broader attack surface. Certainly they're networked, they're available on the internet. And so as we've worked with state and local officials, we've really worked to up the cyber hygiene, protecting those systems, while identifying that the voting systems, those systems that the voters interact with at the polling place that tabulate the votes, are the crown jewels, right? And so we recognize that while the attack surface may be less, that is certainly a higher priority from looking at, you know, making sure the integrity of the vote is maintained. And so we work a lot with local and state officials around building that resilience, having auditability in the system. That ability to reassure voters that their vote was counted as cast is critical. Secretary Nielsen has talked about, about 80% of votes cast in 2016 had an auditable record associated with them, whether that's a paper ballot or otherwise. We'd really like to see heading into 2020 that reach 100% and really build towards doing more efficient, effective auditing of the vote. So it is a diverse system across the election sphere, from the state level to the local level. Most county elections offices are the largest IT operation in the county if you count up total number of assets, all the voting systems, all the e-poll books, the ballot on demand printers, whatnot. And so it's a unique challenge that really needs resourcing and support, and that's what we're focused on at DHS.
And in March, the president signed a bill which gave about $380 million to the states. And I think in my research, I saw that 13 states still have machines that aren't either give a receipt or paper ballot is what the latest I read. And that could have changed since that article. But on average, they guesstimate that it'll take about $200 to $400 million just to make sure those machines are out of the process. Chris is part of good business. I'd be happy to hear that number. But what do you think in your world? I mean, as Matt just said, you are totally dependent on the environment. And we have older machines. We have, I think I heard a number, 9,000 jurisdictions in the U.S. That I'm sure have all different configurations. And so what do you think the most misunderstood part about this entire infrastructure is?
Great question, Sean. We get a lot of questions, especially after inflammatory or incorrect media reports say that voting machines are hackable or remotely accessed or something like that. And we spend a lot of time correcting the narrative about that. And I think it's attributed to folks just not knowing how these machines work. The elections industry in general, and ES&S in particular, we work very hard to design, test, and deliver voting machines, tabulators, and election management systems that are up to EAC, the Elections Assistance Commission's standards, and then go further with testing that states require us to do. These machines that voters interact with are very secure and trustworthy. They are extensively tested during manufacture and pre-election with something called logic and accuracy testing to make sure that they function as designed. This is where our election officials at the state and local level really shine, because they've been conducting elections for decades and they are prepared for all kinds of contingencies. Election officials know what a proper operation of an election system looks like. They know what a voting machine is supposed to act like, and they are trained and alert and aware and are able to detect any kind of tampering or malfunction. So the biggest misconception, I think, out there is that somehow these voting machines that the public interact with are somehow reachable from the internet, and that's just not true. The other point I'd like to make is that our election officials, state and local election officials, not only are they conducting the midterm coming up in the general in 2020, but at least in ES&S's case, we've supported hundreds of elections in the last 12 months. Yeah. There are elections happening across the country in every month of the year. Yeah. And these elections are done safely, reliably, and the results are trustworthy. And I can communicate to you today that will continue.
No, I was saying, and yeah, I think that's a great point. A lot of people just think what we've done since 2016 is 2018. But a lot of these election officials are doing elections monthly or some. I heard, even heard the other night, some are even doing almost every week, they're doing some kind of election. And so these aren't processes that I think are just stood up at a high school twice a year, which is, by the way, what I thought. You know, I thought we just stand up every 2 years and they go, and that must be held to make sure it's updated and secure, but it's a constant process within the environments. My guests today are John Gilligan, Center for Internet Security Chief Executive, Chris Woloshin, Vice President, System Security, Election Systems and Software, Matthew Masterson, Senior Cybersecurity Advisor at DHS for Election Security. I'm Sean Kelly, and this is Cyber Chat on Federal News Radio, part of the Federal News Network.
Federal News Radio is now Federal News Network. We're the news organization of record for the federal community. Our mission is helping you meet your mission. Federal News Network.
Welcome back to Cyber Chat on Federal News Radio, part of the Federal News Network. I am Sean Kelly. My guest today is John Gilligan, Center for Internet Security Chief Executive, Chris Woloshin, Vice President of System Security, Election Systems and Software, and Matthew Masterson, Senior Cybersecurity Advisor at DHS for Election Security. Gentlemen, before we went on break, we were talking about the elections, the infrastructure, and those kind of things. As I mentioned earlier, in March 23rd, President Trump signed in a bill that put $380 million for states to update their election equipment. 13 states right now, at last I read, did not have machines that could give receipt or paper ballots. Are we just scratching the surface with $380 million? Chris?
Well, Sean, we think that that $380 million should be considered a down payment on continued and regular recurring investment in our election infrastructure. It is true that a number of states are still using equipment that was built in 2005, 2006 that does not produce a paper record of their vote. We, Election Systems and Software, and the industry are in favor of modernization and upgrade to equipment that produces a cast ballot record or a paper ballot that is verifiable. We believe that the only way that election officials and the public can truly believe that their vote was cast and counted as intended is through an audit of that election. States do it 50 different ways, but we'll support any manner of audit that ensures that the voter believes that their ballot was cast, counted, and audited correctly.
And Matt, you talked a little bit about the infrastructure and security in depth earlier, but we can't, you're in the federal government, you're at DHS, we can't buy our way out of this problem, right? So, you know, when you look at DHS's role, how do you look at how they can help states get ready for this?
Yeah, absolutely. And our commitment to working with state and locals is to provide resources and support, right? So information sharing as well as the services we provide that otherwise may not be available to them or may be cost prohibitive because most local election offices are really resource constrained. They for years have been seen as a nice to have, but not invested in. And so as you look at the $380 million that the Election Assistance Commission distributed and the states very quickly have begun to use, that's an important step. But I think looking at election infrastructure, it's going to take ongoing and regular resourcing, not just money, but that support, that IT expertise that DHS offers. And so we've made tremendous progress with the state and locals providing that level of support. But this is just the start. There is no finish line to this in securing elections. This is why declaring or making elections critical infrastructure was so important, because it highlighted the critical nature of these systems to our democracy into our country and is enabling us to prioritize services and support to those election officials, but also allowing those elections jurisdictions to talk to their county commissioners, to their state legislators and say, look, we're critical to the nation's operation. You need to invest appropriately, both with people, money, and otherwise in order to protect those systems.
No, and I think that's a great point. As a former CISO, Chris, a former CISO, I think, John, I hope you agree as well. I mean, we all want to come together and say, here's a standard. This is what it needs to look like and deploy this across the country. 9,000 jurisdictions, you know, and our environment, that's just not possible. So you talked a little bit about it, but do you feel like you're reaching out to the states or the states are actually coming to you asking for assistance?
Yeah, it is the progress we've made since 2016 when the states were, to put it mildly, skeptical of our role in this is tremendous. We're working with all 50 states. The states are regularly sharing information with us from the field. That's our best source of information about what kind of threat is present, what kind of activity is targeting their systems. And they're coming to us to receive that support and services. And we're working with over 1,300 local jurisdictions as well. And so that progress that's been built, it really is a two-way street. And it's incumbent on us at the federal level, at DHS, to show value to those election officials. What is it we're doing that are helping them manage risk and protect their systems? And so on an ongoing basis, we're continuing to evaluate how can we provide value and help support that risk management process.
And John, you guys put out a lot of resources at CIS. Are you seeing the states reach out to them? As far as, you know, educational resources, the handbook and those things, are you starting to see that they're reaching out for help?
Absolutely. Yeah. The change and the willingness of the states to accept federal help and through us help has changed dramatically. So one of the things we haven't talked about is DHS had asked us to field sensors that we put on the elections networks that help monitor and look for potential attacks and intrusions. And initially, when we discussed that, we had a number of elections offices that were a bit reticent. But we're now, as we approach this election, we have virtually all of the state-level elections organizations where we have fielded the monitors, and they're very proactive in working with us and trying to improve their security.
Outstanding.
If I can just very quickly on John's point there, because I think it's so important. We've gone in 2016 from having a handful of those sensors deployed on state networks looking at traffic targeting election infrastructure to 103 of those sensors deployed across the country in 42 states right now. That's not just helpful to the states that have those deployed. That helps the risk management environment across the entire sector because we're receiving this information. We're able to analyze it and push alerts and information back down. And that, to me, is a huge improvement from 2016 to today.
And not to ask the special sauce, because I know there's some parts you can't share, but is on election night, will that information be readily available to pivot as things are going on, or is that going to be more of lessons learned after the fact?
No, absolutely. That information, again, the systems owners, operators, those state and local officials are the ones receiving this information, but it's also going back to the EIISAC that CIS runs, so the Information Sharing and Analysis Center, so that we can absolutely share and pivot, and we're regularly sharing that information right now. Technical indicators, threat indicators are being pushed down regularly now to state and local officials to help them defend their networks.
Let me add, Sean, one additional point. You mentioned election night. So on the day of elections, and we have these available now, but generally they're going to be most heavily used on the day of elections, we have, in essence, chat rooms, secure chat rooms, where we have most of the elections offices connected. We're connected with DHS, we're connected with other federal resources, and we're able to, in real time, look at events, deal with questions. If there's something that happens in the media, make sure everybody is aware of whether it's a false report, and to deal with the situations that may arise. And again, that level of coordination and cooperation just did not exist in the past.
John, you may not know this, but there's voting in progress right now. Several states have early voting going. DHS, the EAC, the Center for Internet Security have been proactive in standing up these situational awareness rooms. There are frequent calls to discuss election security issues. And it's my feeling that DHS, the Center for Internet Security, and the EAC are supporting elections now. They're in progress.
Chris, this is kind of in your lane a little bit. What is HAVA?
Well, Matt grew up with HAVA, so I'll kick it off by saying that the Help America Vote Act was passed in 2003, I believe, as a direct result of the 2000 presidential election, where there was a ton of confusion and lawsuits over paper ballots, and hanging chads was the phrase of the day back then. And it was Congress and the federal government's reaction to up the game of elections, to insert technology to make results more reliable and reports of results faster, so that on election night, that the media and the public could know who their elected candidates were, who the winners were. And the infusion of cash, almost $4 billion after the Help America Vote Act of 2003 was passed, that infusion of cash spread across a number of vendors at that time. to help states and local election officials build technology, insert technology to accomplish the goals of HAVA. Matt, over to you.
Yeah. Now, so the Help America Vote Act, among what Chris already described, also created the Election Assistance Commission. It's the one federal agency dedicated to work serving exclusively state and local election officials in the elections community. I'm the former chairman of the commission. And it really is focused on three things. One is being a clearinghouse of information and best practices for state and local officials. So everything from cybersecurity to voter registration and list maintenance to post-election audits, you name it. It also focused on accessibility, making sure that voters, all voters, whether military and overseas, voters with disabilities or voters with language needs, have full access to the process and are able to cast the vote privately and independently, which is a really important concept. Yeah, we talk a lot about cybersecurity, but if the system's not available, right, then the system's not secure either. So having that full access necessary. And then finally, the testing and certification of voting systems. So the EAC runs a voluntary certification process for voting systems. And so the Help America Vote Act was the first real time that the federal government invested in elections, that almost $4 billion that Chris talked about. And that was also the vehicle that the $380 million that you've mentioned before that was used to distribute that money to the states. And so the EAC is vital to this community. We work regularly at DHS with the EAC, working on using that funds, identifying the priorities to manage risks with that funds, and getting it out to the community. And the EAC did a great job at that.
Very good. John?
No, I think that the HAVA was, as Matt said, the first time that the federal government really made significant investments in elections. And what ended up happening is there was a whole generation of new equipment that was bought with that $4 billion. And hearkening back to a prior discussion we had, it's really much of that technology that's still out in the field. And so if you think about technology in a 2005 genre, and you think about your own personal use or your business use, how much of the technology that you're using today had its fielding in 2005? But that's what we often have in the election space. And that's, as Matt indicated, is one of our challenges because, you know, elections is not something that's sexy and it doesn't get a lot of resources and it's relatively expensive to field these systems. So I think going forward, that becomes a challenge for the nation is that, all right, how do we put in place a regimen that we can ensure that we get modern technology, we continue to refresh it, we continue to provide adequate security as is needed.
My guests today have been John Gilligan, Center for Internet Security, Chief Executive, Chris Woloshin, Vice President, System Security, Election Systems and Software, Matthew Messison, Senior Cybersecurity Advisor for DHS for Election Security. I am Sean Kelly. You can follow me on Twitter at Mr. Sean Kelly and get your latest cyber news on cyberchatnews.com.
You've been listening to Cyber Chat with Sean Kelly on Federal News Radio, part of the Federal News Network. Tune in Friday mornings at 10:30 or subscribe to this show on iTunes or Podcast One.